Elisabeth Sechser will gutes neues Arbeiten. Gutes neues Arbeiten für alle. Hello and welcome to a very special episode of my podcast, Great Work for All of Us. My name is Elisabeth Sechser and I hope to inspire you a little bit again. This time I will introduce you to the work of Rayan Eisler. It was such an honor for me to talk with her about her work, the distinctions of the domination system and the partnership system. We talked about the old and incomplete economic thinking and what it is causing, an economic as if caring matters. We also talked about Mary Follett and how much the Peter Codex fit to the caring economics. Here you will find a few snippets and key findings of recommendations of the great work of Rayan Eisler. I can warmly recommend everyone to read her books after the podcast and to dive further into all these interdisciplinary research results.
Our economic system is based on a misconception of human nature, Rayan Eisler.
Warmly welcome, Dr. Rayan Eisler. Thank you so much to have you here in this episode to talk about your great work for caring economics. From the domination system to the partnership system, from alpha to beta. This fits together very well.
Your work is so aligned with these ideas and with our work. And of course, Mary Follett was amazing. I mean, she was really a systems thinker.
Yes.
And as you say, you challenge the system, not the people. And I think that that's exactly the approach that I've taken, which is that we are all basically socialized to be in what I call a domination trance. And yeah, we're beginning to wake up.
It is not easy to summarize all of your work, so I will put links about your work and researches into the show notes. Otherwise, it will take hours and hours. But I will do my best now. You are a cultural historian and evolutionary theorist, a social scientist, attorney, and author whose research, writing, and speaking have influenced fields ranging from history, literature, philosophy, art, economics, psychology, anthropology, human rights, education, religious studies, political science, women's studies, management studies, and healthcare. Your focus has been on identifying the conditions that support our human capacity for consciousness, creativity, and caring rather than the incentivity, destructiveness, and cruelty. You are the founder and president of the Center of Partnership Studies, dedicated to research and education, and editor-in-chief of the Interdisciplinary Journal of Partnership Studies, an online peer-reviewed journal at the University of Minnesota. So there's such a big impact you have been given to the world. And last year, your book, The Real Wealth of Nation, published in 27, was translated in German language by Ulrike Brandhorst, mit dem Titel Die verkannten Grundlagen der Ökonomie, Wege zu einer Caring Economy. And we will talk now about your work and this great book.
Thank you. I am a systems person and a futurist too, of course, because I've predicted many things. But I think that we are so used to thinking in compartments, you know, in silos. But the movement now is towards systems thinking.
Yes.
So the times are beginning to catch up.
You were born in Vienna in 1931, and in 1939, you and your parents had to flee from the Nazis, and a lot of your family members were killed in the Holocaust. So you escaped to Cuba with one of the last ships to get out of this regime, and in Havana too. You also experienced poverty and misery before you came to the United States. So how did all this experience influence your life and work?
Well, yes, because I think that what happened is that these were, of course, very traumatic experiences for me as a little girl. And it led me to questions that many of us have asked, which is, does it have to be this way? When we humans have such a capacity for consciousness, for caring, for creativity, why have we seen so much insensitivity, cruelty, destructiveness? And eventually, after many other life experiences, I set out to really, in my multidisciplinary, cross-cultural, historical research, to try to answer that question. But I used, as you know, a very different methodology from the one that has been the conventional approach, which frankly, when you really think about it, which we've been trained not to do, leaves out or marginalizes the majority of humanity, women and children. Cannot see the configuration of a society when you leave out these huge, huge areas.
You focus that areas and you bring it back in the focus of all of us. In your research, you find out, you're describing the two different models, the domination system and the partnership systems. The domination system and the partnership system have fundamentally different patterns and of relationships that promote or inhibit value and institution, and in all areas of life, including, of course, the economies.
The domination system, top-down control in families, economies, and states, and all institutions in between. Rigid male dominance, and with this, the devaluation by both men and women of anything stereotypically considered feminine, including care and caregiving. The acceptance, even idealization, of abuse and violence as a means of imposing one's will on others. A system of beliefs that presents relations of dominating or being dominated as inevitable and desirable. The partnership system, a more democratic and egalitarian structure in the family, economy, and state or tribe. Equal partnership between women and men, and with this, a high valuing in women and men, as well as in social and economic policy, of traits and activities stereotypically considered feminine, such as care and caregiving. A low degree of abuse and violence, because they are not needed to maintain rigid rankings of domination. A system of beliefs that presents relations of partnership and mutual respect as normal and desirable.
Why is it so important for us to understand the distinctions and the difference? So we need to learn that, to see it.
Well, I will back up a little and tell you that what happened when you use a database that really does not marginalize the majority of humanity, women and children, when you do pay attention to childhood, what we today know from neuroscience, how fundamental what children observe and children experience is in the development of nothing less than our brains, and hence how we think, how we feel, how we act, including how we vote. If you really look at the fact that there are two basic forms of humanity, the male form and the female form, and that how a society organizes those relations and the roles that go with the so-called masculine and feminine has a huge part to play. When you take that into account, what you begin to see are patterns, configurations that go beyond the way we've been taught to think about right, left, religious, secular, Eastern, Western, Northern, Southern, capitalist, socialist, because if you really think about it, well, I discovered, of course, immediately that I could not answer my questions about what would support our truly human capacities. by using them, because there have been repressive, violent, regressive regimes in every one of these categories. And as I said, if you really think about these categories, they ignore or marginalize women and children. So what I began to see, let me give you some examples. We were talking about Nazi Germany, Austria. If you look at these very repressive modern regimes, very violent, whether it was the Nazis, whether it was Stalin, Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, whether it was Khomeini in Iran or ISIS or the Taliban, you know, some are religious, some are Eastern, some are secular, some are Western, some are capitalists, some are communists or socialists. You begin to see that every one of them actually has some very fundamental, really commonalities. That is the domination configuration. They are both authoritarian in both the family and the state or tribe. Conventional studies don't look at the family except at best in passing. And that's a big, big problem. Secondly, a top priority for every one of these regimes is subordination of women and the so-called feminine. Real men are defined by not being, by both women and men, because they're, you know, we're all brought up that way. So we're looking at family, which we aren't used to looking at. We're looking at gender and the kinds of values that a society will support, because in domination systems, the so-called masculine is above, mm-hmm. you know, domination, conquest, even violence, is above the so-called feminine, caring, caregiving, nonviolence. And then, of course, you have in domination system as contrasted to partnership systems, you have built in a great deal of abuse and violence, because how else can you maintain these rankings of man over man over woman, race over race, religion over religion, man over nature? You know, basically it's force. And then you have very different stories and language. So the partnership, as you move to the partnership side, and we lived, I mean, what we know today, and we have to all be part of changing our story, because what we know today is that human society for millions of years, first when we were foragers, you know, gatherers, hunters, and then in the early farming societies, and even in the so-called high civilization of Minoan Crete, we oriented more to the partnership side. They were not matriarchies. Mm-hmm. You know, matriarchy and patriarchy are two sides of a domination coin. They were more partnership oriented. Mm-hmm. And we see trends today in that direction, including in economics. But to get back to how it influences economics, we have, whether it's in capitalism or socialism, had a gendered system of values, mm-hmm. in which whether it's caring for people starting at birth or caring for our natural life support systems, it is considered only reproductive rather than productive work, which is crazy.
Somehow there's always money for prisons, for weapons, for wars. Somehow there is never enough money for caring for children, for people's health, for keeping a clean and healthy environment. We need to change the story. Investment in caring for and educating people is the best investment a nation can make. Ryan Eisler.
I think that what we're finding is that the crisis of the technological shift from the industrial or mainly manufacturing to the so-called post-industrial knowledge service era is both dislocating and therefore difficult, really, as is COVID. I mean, COVID has exposed the lack of resiliency, the lack of reality, really, of our conventional economic thinking. But it is also an opportunity to redefine what is and is not productive work, especially in our knowledge service post-industrial age. Even economists who are brainwashed, really, with this, you know, looking at only what is considered, quote, productive in the old thinking, they tell us that the most important capital for this era is what they call high-quality human capital. Well, I call it human infrastructure. Well, we're beginning to even hear the term human infrastructure from the President of the United States. When I first published in the United States, my book, which now is available in German, it's been updated and it's been somewhat abridged, somewhat shortened. But when I first wrote it in 2007, just putting caring and economics in the same sentence, it was like, what are you talking about? Today, we hear caring economics, caring economy is everywhere. But unfortunately, well, fortunately, we're beginning to pay attention to the work of care. Unfortunately, it has become a synonym only for what I call the care economy, the direct care, whether it's in households, whether it's in the market, whether it's for young people or babies or elderly or the sick or disabled. So that line between co-option and transformation is a very thin line. I would like to propose that what we need is a post-capitalist and post-socialist, because we need both markets and businesses. I mean, COVID-19 showed that very, very clearly. We need government and we need businesses. You know, I mean, it's not either or, it's both, but they should be guided by the goal of caring for people starting at birth. Then we have this high quality human capital and caring for our natural life support systems, both of which are ignored in both capitalist and socialist theory. I mean, we have to really understand this, that capitalism and socialism came out of very early industrial times in the 1700s, in the 1800s. We are now in the 21st century post-industrial era, but even beyond that, and this is something that I really think that once we understand it, a lot of things begin to make sense and we can change them. Both Marx and Smith saw the work of caring for people in households as to be done for free by a woman in a male-controlled household. So there is, it for them, as I said, it was just reproductive, and they have nothing to say about caring for our natural life support systems. Yeah. Both Marx and Smith, nature was there to be exploited, period. Yeah. So we really need to move to what I've called a caring economics of partnerism.
So there's an old, incomplete, incorrect economic system, and this misconception prevents economic and human development because it is focusing just 3 of 6 economic fields. So it's focusing the market economic, the government economic, and the illegal economic. And the new economics, the economics as if caring matters, includes all 6 fields and the interaction of these 6 fields and how they are connected with each other. And so this is an holistic view on economics.
What I point out, of course, in my book is that the conventional domain of economics has left out these 3 life-sustaining sectors, the household sector, the volunteer community sector, and the natural economic sector. And it's impossible to really have a sensible, realistic approach to by trying to add on things to a system that's really crumbling.
Yes, because the three puzzle pieces are missing that is causing a lot of damage, and it's not really economic, it's uneconomic. In the book, there's also the great picture of the caring economy, the German version picture, and in the middle, there is the private household. It's the heart of the caring economy. Can you say something about why it begins in the private household? It begins. Our economy starts there.
For many reasons. I mean, we would all be dead. I mean, just very simply, if we weren't cared for. And that care for most people happens in the household. But as I said, neuroscience really proves what the theory of, you know, the new economics of the caring economics of partnerism shows, that if we don't pay attention to these formative years, which again happen in the household, then we are really continuing in what I've called the domination trance, which is the acceptance of something that is really irrational as normal. And you know, Gandhi said it very well. He said we should not mistake what is habitual for what is normal. We can create better norms, and that's our job. My newest book, Nurturing Our Humanity, really shows details the evidence from neuroscience. And what we know is that especially in times of disequilibrium, you know, like the shift from the industrial to the post-industrial age. And of course, climate change is another source of disequilibrium, the pandemic, etc. People who are brought up early on in households that orient to the domination side, they will vote for strongman leaders, because it's familiar, and it's not on a rational level. This is the thing that we have to understand. Our brains develop long before our critical faculties are fully formed. So while we can change, and people do change, it is very difficult. In fact, denial, whether it's climate change denial or election result denial, or COVID-19 denial, these are characteristic of the domination brain, which has a very difficult time, we know from studies now, looking inside the brain, that the parts of our brain designed by evolution really to help us be resilient, to help us really deal with change, are much slower than they need to be in people from these backgrounds. Now that's huge. So we have to take into account what I've called four cornerstones: childhood, gender, because of this gendered system of values. I mean, you know, we can talk about that maybe later, but I can give you examples of what I mean. Certainly we need a new economics, but one that really goes beyond this ridiculous argument, should we have markets or should we have government policies? We need both. And yes, changing our language and our stories, because I'll tell you something, as long as we are stuck in the old categories, right, left, religious, secular, Eastern, Western, a colleague of mine calls them weapons of mass distraction, because they fragment our consciousness. But linguistic psychologists are very clear. The categories, and this is very true of social categories, provided by a language channel our thinking, so it's almost impossible to see another alternative. We need new words, and that's why I coined new words. partnership systems, domination systems, hierarchies of actualization, as contrasted to hierarchies of domination, etc.
That's very important ingredient also in our beta work. We really we be aware of the language that is spoken in companies, because it really tells us a lot about how the company like is thinking and working, and if there is this domination model in the we call it the alpha system, and we really work to get new words into companies, because the words changes reality, and it's really important to be aware of the power of language in both sides.
I want to say that I think, from what I know of your work and from what you have sent me, it is so clearly aligned with the movement from an economics of domination to an economics of partnerism. And I think that we, the finger pointing is against capitalism always, but it isn't capitalism. Look, trickle-down economics, so-called supply-side economics, it's really feudal economics. It goes way back to Chinese emperors and Arab sheikhs and Indian pashas, where those on top control the resources and those on bottom, the majority, are supposed to content themselves with the scraps dropping from the opulent tables of those on top. I mean, it's obscene, really. But we've been so brainwashed by this language of they are the job creators. No, we are all part of an economy. We're interdependent. And the old model doesn't work. I mean, that's the thing. It just isn't working. It never worked. And today, in our post-industrial era, it's a recipe for disaster.
We can create an economic system, economic rules, metrics, and policies that support caring for ourselves, others, and the health of Mother Earth. Economic systems are human creations. Ryan Eisler.
The good news, I mean, once you start looking at the struggle for our future, and it is a struggle for our future, as not between right, left, religious, secular, Eastern, Western, you know, everything, men and women, certainly it's not that, or straight people and gay people or trans people. I mean, once you see that it's really the struggle between those who want to hang on to traditions of domination that we've inherited and those who want to move to a world where we can not only survive, you know, given climate change, but thrive, then what you begin to see is a lot of movement. You certainly see the regression. I mean, Trump in the United States, the dictatorships all over the world, frankly, in the North as well as in the South. I mean, but what you see then is that there is also a lot of movement in a partnership direction, but what it has lacked, and this is what this work provides, is a frame, a conceptual frame. And as long as we use the wrong frame, we're still trying to somehow do add-ons. I think of it as we've got a crumbling economic pie, and we're still trying to attach to the crumbs, fixing them. And it won't work. We have to bake a different pie. Same ingredients, people, nature, ideas, creativity. I'm a great believer in human creativity, but it needs to be channeled in the direction of what do we need. And you and your work, you can see what works. Mm-hmm. And what works, yes, you have hierarchies, but they're hierarchies of actualization rather than domination. Yes, you have, I mean, you have some of the very same ingredients, really, but people can be creative more. In a domination system, creativity has to be rigidly channeled or suppressed. And of course, the trend towards support of the work of caring for people in families, in households, which the Northern European nations have really been moving toward much more. I mean, the United States under Biden is just beginning to really, there were a few states, California, where I live, had paid, you know, had pioneered a family leave, but very limited. And we've got to really invest in caring for people. And we have developed new metrics, by the way.
Okay.
I don't know if you know about them. The social wealth economic indicators that show the economic value, caring for people starting at birth and caring for our natural life support systems.
It's caring economy goes beyond GPT. We measure not the right things, and it's in the GPT, there's a lot of things are going wrong. Can you maybe tell us something about the GPT and about the social wealth index and its beyond GPT movement we need?
More and more people are recognizing, of course, that GDP is deeply flawed. Why? Frankly, because it follows the same flawed economic perspective as both capitalism and socialism. So what does it do? It includes as productive work activities in the market that harm or take life. I mean, selling cigarettes, selling unhealthy fast foods, and the resulting medical costs and the resulting funeral costs, they all make GDP go up.
Yeah.
An old stand of trees, you know, it's only part of GDP when it's dead, when it's chopped down. Whereas we need trees to breathe. But not only, and this is really the part that we have to really pay attention to now, not only does it include negatives as positives GDP, but it fails to include as productive work the work of caring for people and caring for nature in the non-market sectors. And in the market, of course, because of this gendered system of values, that work is very low paid with little training, which makes no sense. I mean, as you said, we know from neuroscience how important the early years are. We should invest enormously in the training, in the pay for people who care for children. If we are to have this high quality human capital is not produced in universities. It largely depends on the quality of care and education that children receive in their first years. That's what we know today from neuroscience. And some of the European nations are beginning, the Northern European nations, to really pay attention to this, but it is much too slow. And what's happening now in the United States, which is way behind, by the way, is a movement to really put that issue in the center. And COVID-19 has helped us do that because it has shown the importance of care work for children, for the sick, for the COVID-19 victims. And we have to have a living wage. I mean, in the United States, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, women over the age of 65 are twice as likely to live in poverty as men of the same age. And it isn't only job discrimination. It's that most of these women are or were either full or part-time caregivers for free in
yeah.
households. That
yeah.
has to change.
There are some studies about that already all over the world. I think you have ones from Switzerland that they made a research that I think it would be 70% of the GPT.
It varies. Today it's more like 40%. But there are other studies like one from Australia that it's 50%. I mean, it's huge. I mean, 50% of GDP is huge. Yet it is invisible. So that's why we developed alternative metrics. You know, we value what we measure and we measure what we value. And most of the so-called GDP alternatives just look at quality of life. They don't isolate what makes for a better quality of life, what makes for higher human capacity. Are the social wealth economic indicators, and now we're working with a wonderful team of economists to develop an index, because you know there are 24 social wealth economic indicators. That's a lot. So we are basically updating, condensing, and trying to have one or two numbers so that policymakers can see in both business and in government the economic return from investing in caring for people starting at birth and caring for our natural life support system. It is a question of a shifting of consciousness. You know, we always look for the quote hard data, right? Having some of this, and you can't really measure completely the value of care. You know, we know that it goes beyond economics, but we can measure its economic value. And that's all we're trying to do. And to show that basically, unless we do, we are going to not have the right policies in either business. I mean, when we first launched the social wealth economic indicators, we had a human resources vice president from a Fortune 500 company as one of the people on the panel. And he said, we're talking about our future employees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got it. But how long did it last, his understanding? Because he had to go back to a world that ignores that, right? So we have to change that world. And you can find out much more, as you said, Elizabeth, at centerforpartnership.org. We would like to get various governments, including, of course, the Austrian government, to become interested in working with us, in using this, because it is, frankly, the way we need to look at the allocation of resources, because we not only look at outcomes, you know, the standard of living, etc., we look at inputs, what kinds of investments. So the United States, for example, of all the OECD nations, we found invests less than half in family support than other OECD nations do on average. And not surprisingly, then, the United States has the highest infant mortality, the highest child poverty, the highest maternal mortality rates of any developed nations. Happiness. Finland appears for the fourth year in a row, and Finland has in place caring, many caring policies, okay? Also has women in leadership. See, as the status of women rises, men also find it easier to embrace more stereotypically feminine.
The status of women is a powerful predictor of everyone's quality of life. When the status and power of women is greater, so also is the nation's general quality of life. When they are lower, so is the quality of life for all. Ryan Eisler.
We did a study back in 1995 based on statistical data from 89 nations around the globe. And as you said, we found that the status of women is a powerful predictor of everyone's quality of life in a nation. And if you fast forward and you look at some of the reports from the World Economic Forum, it's very interesting, but people have to put them together. If you put together the nations that are at the top of the gender gap reports, you know, Northern European nations like Finland, and the World Economic Forum's ranking of global competitiveness, they go together. These nations are more competitive precisely. They're not socialist. I mean, in the United States, you know, socialist is the big scare word. But these nations are not socialist. They have a very healthy business sector precisely because they invest in caring policies, in universal health care, in universal high quality childhood education, accessible, cheap, well paid. And they also have very generous paid parental leave for both mothers and fathers. And it's very interesting because if they started by just saying, well, both can get it, but men wouldn't take it. And then they changed it to say, well, in a family where there is a woman and a man, or, you know, where there are two people, if both don't take it, neither gets it. Well, and started to take parental leave like crazy. You have to design things in a way that take into account the biases.
So what are the calls of action? What can we do now?
And just the concept behind it. I think we need to start educating both business people and government people about the need for a metric that really focuses on the showing what is needed for success in the post-industrial era and also in an era of climate change and pandemic. And I really want to say that one of the things that we have to understand is that economics don't just spring up in a vacuum. They're embedded in a culture. And depending on the degree of orientation to the partnership or the domination side of the partnership domination social scale, your economics are going to be different. So the fact that we have seen some movement towards policies that support the work of care, you know, the so-called women's work, I mean, whether it's done by women or men, you know, or in social and economic policy, that's a very, very important partnership trend. But it has to change the whole system.
Yes.
You can't just have that and continue as always. And so this is an opportunity to really familiarize yourself with this new frame. Yes. With the partnership domination scale, see how economics follows. You know, it'll be top down, as I said, whether it's a Chinese emperor or trickle down economics, you know, so-called supply down, it's domination economics, or it'll be more partnership economics where caring for people, the so-called feminine, is valued in both women and men.
And it's a totally different frame or system. So it's like we have it in an organization, like the alpha and beta system. It's different. It's totally different. So you cannot, in an alpha system, you cannot create a partnership system in a top-down command and control system. So because it's totally different thinking and it's not working. So that's hard for people on the one side, because they think, okay, we can maybe do little by little, but you really need to rethink the system and then to rebuild it together.
Well, and the thing is this, that the data show that actually organizations, whether it's a family or whether it's a business or whether it's a government that orients more to the partnership side, it's more effective. It works better because, among other things, you get the creativity from everyone. And there's less fear. There is more mental health. I mean, the advantages are huge, but as long as people don't put it all together in this frame of the partnership domination social scale, it's very hard to put your finger on it. So that's why we always put economics in that frame. And we talk about economics in terms of not only what we, you know, measure, but also what we reward, what we reward. And the present system rewards predatory behavior. And as long as that continues, you're encouraging it, basically. Yes. So, I mean, it can be done, but we have to deal with the resistance from the domination system and the denial.
Mm.
You know, but the good news is how many people are beginning to be open.
Yes.
Understand, well, Einstein said it. He said, you cannot solve problems with the same thinking that created them. And that's why we really need these new categories and this new economic system.
We need a strong free market, enlightened government policies, giving visibility and value to the work of caring for people and nature. We really need to leave behind this domination economics. Ryan Eisler.
It's our job, first of all, changing consciousness is something that every one of us can do. Mm-hmm. We all have a certain sphere of influence, family, work, friends. We can write articles, you know, op-eds or letters to the editor. We can recommend certain people to be interviewed, to be opinion makers. But the first step, as you said, Elizabeth, is changing our own consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that really means immersing yourself more. And that's why I'm so happy that my book on economics is available now in this new wonderful edition. In both Germany and in Austria and in Switzerland. If we immerse ourselves and if we really, then we too become agents of accelerating the shift from domination to partnership. I think leadership is defined, power is, you know, Kelch und Schwert is defined really two ways of looking at power. Schwert, you know, the sword.
Yeah.
It's the power to dominate, to control, to take life. So it's power over. But the chalice is both power with and power to, creative power. It's the power to give life, to nurture life, to illuminate life. And so I personally and in my work write about both shifting from power over, which doesn't really work, as you know from your work that you do, to both power with, but also power to.
Mm-hmm.
The power to create, the power to think for yourself, the power to make mistakes and to experiment and try new things. I think that people who want to think differently will see that what we're talking about are, number one, an understanding that economics are human creations, we can recreate them, that they're embedded in a larger culture, and yes, that we have to consider family and the work done in families and in households as productive, not just reproductive, that we have to, as you say, really think about economics from a holistic perspective that takes into account the three life-sustaining economic sectors of the household, the volunteer community, and the natural economy, which neither capitalism nor socialism do. Mm-hmm. GDP doesn't. And of course, I mean, this is really in progress. You know, partnerism is a growing theory in some of the work that you're doing in organizations. This is a theory that applies to all areas. And again, going back to the beginning, to start thinking in terms of the partnership domination social scale and forget our really quote education to either ignore or marginalize the majority of humanity. I mean, I woke up one day And I thought, this is so strange. In all my years of so-called higher education, there had been hardly anything by, about, or for people like me, women. And the historian of science, David Noble, points out that no wonder our universities are so siloed and so fragmented and so incomplete in what they teach, because if you think about it, he wrote a book called A World Without Women. And he pointed out that a Western science came out of a clerical, misogynist, celibate, culture of all men. So it was a world without women, and I would also add a world without children. So we've got to change that. So we're talking about a lot of ahas.
Yeah.
And having a holistic view. So so I think you've covered so much, Elizabeth, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a great Thursday.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Keep up your wonderful work. Wiedersehen.
Bye-bye. Elisabeth Sechser will gutes neues Arbeiten. Gutes neues Arbeiten für alle.